Good evening. This is KGVM 95.9 on your dial, Bozeman, Montana. This is the Men's Network Radio. And tonight, we have our guest is Tom Canton. Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yeah, Canton.
Canton. And he is the author of The Mindful Addict and May I Sit With You, two beautiful books that I had an opportunity to read. We're recording live here in Hawaii. Tom is an ex-surfer, and he got into the whole surfing culture back in '60s.
Yeah, late 50s.
And that included, during that time, you know, there was, I guess, a lot of drugs and alcohol and whatnot. I could relate to it. I was in the ski culture. And it was the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we were loaded every time we went skiing, but it was a beautiful experience, and then you get carried away. But it's The Mindful Addiction is a great book. And last year when we were here, you had mentioned about the possibility of making it into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still ongoing?
It's full on.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's full on. Had a conference call with two producers and the screenwriter yesterday, in fact.
Oh, nice. So that's good. You know, one thing I'd like to ask is, just to start out, is what is the biggest difference in your life now that you're living with your addictions? Than when you,
well, yeah.
You know, than you, when you were living with your addictions.
Well, yeah, it's night and day, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
sure.
I wake up, I know where I am in the morning, you know, besides before, and, you know, just a clearer, and a life that works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're using, nothing's working. You're in trouble all the time. You're sabotaging your own life. My life works now in a very pleasant, beautiful way, you know, because I'm clean.
Yeah.
I might add, I've been clean now for 48 years. So
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah, because you're what now? You're about 76, you mentioned?
Yeah, I'm going to be 76 next week.
Next week. Wow. Congratulations. Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, in The Mindful Addict, in Chapter 2, you mentioned how you tricked yourself into believing that mind-expanding drug use was a path to spiritual awakening, and you created a self-invented religion and considered needle-driven drugs to be for true addicts. And so how do you replace one addiction with another to satisfy your belief that we have overcome our addictions?
Well, that's a good question. There's only one way to really tell, and that's time. You know, if you're really clean and you've overcome this particular addiction, it'll show in your life. You know, it's gonna that simple. It's it just is, and we don't really want to necessarily replace one addiction with another. That seems to happen, but the main thing is to get onto a spiritual path. You know, I don't talk of, you know, it doesn't matter about your belief in God or any of that stuff. It's just getting on a spiritual path, a spiritual way of life. And the way we do that is we bring new principles into our lives. You know, instead of anger, we have peace, more peace, you know. We're responding to life in a much different way now. And by living these new principles, I'm in 12-step recovery, and so there's principles in those steps. And you start to bring those, invite them in, and your life just begins to change. I have no power to change it myself. But working these spiritual principles, that's how it happens.
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up, because back in the time of Timothy Leary and
exactly.
Dick Albert, Ram Dass, and
yeah.
then I was just reading an article, I think his name is William Richards, and he was experimenting with psilocybin.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole thing there was how it awakened his spiritual mind.
Yeah.
And I, like you, I know when I was you know, dropping acid and smoking and all that, I told myself, as long as I don't stick a needle in me or get into cocaine, I'm good.
Right.
And what a false pretense, really.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what really got me in that chapter when you were talking about that, how you've replaced addictions. And even to this day, we have all sorts of addictions.
Oh, yeah, we
coffee
do.
Or,
absolutely.
You know, whatever it is that you get fixated on is an addiction. So, you know, I can see how, like in your book, I like the way you take with the, even with your other book, the May I Sit With You. So you get more into the Buddhic principles.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way you combine both of them together.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of bring in some spiritual belief there.
Right.
You know, in chapter 12 of the book, you mentioned the practice of Dharma, how you ask at the start of a sponsorship, you know, how is your relationship with the present moment?
Right.
So,
exactly.
How relevant is that to recovery?
Everything. I mean, the whole idea of being... Okay, so when you first come into 12-step programs, if one thing you start to hear is, we only have to do this one day at a time.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, stay clean today. Don't listen to the monkey mind. It's going to tell you to go get loaded. But just stay clean today. And you can use tomorrow. So you do this one day at a time. You don't put this big burden on yourself. I can't use the rest of my life. That'll kill an addict. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But when you ask them to stay clean one day at a time, they can do it. Now, of course, with the Buddhist practice and stuff like that, and this whole thing, mindfulness is a huge industry now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mindfulness is in all big corporations.
Right.
They find out if you give the worker a 20-minute break at lunchtime or some time during the day to do a 20-minute meditation, their productivity is going to go up. Who they are as a person is going to change. They're going to be a much better employee because they're... So one moment, the moment has now replaced the day with me. So it's not one day at a time, it's one moment at a time. And there's a very important reason for living in the present moment, and that is that if we're not in the present moment, we're in a story. That's what we call it, a storyline in our head, just thousands of thoughts taking over. Like I've been going through some physical medical stuff lately, you know, and I have to make appointments with the doctor, and you know, you start tripping out a week before that, you know, and you get a story in your head. What if I've got this? What if I've got that? You know, and all of a sudden, it's just like you have it already. So you're already feeling stress, fear, and it's all about something that has not even happened yet. And that's why we like to keep coming back to the present moment, because the present moment is what it is right now. We don't have to try to change it or manipulate it in any way.
Well, that's really interesting. Now, my wife and I are here with Tom, and he treated us to did you call them singing bowls? Tibetan singing bowls. And we were laying down, and sure enough, my mind was going through a whole bunch of stories before we even did this interview, you know.
Right.
Anything, what am I going to ask him, you know, how is this going to work? And then it went into some other stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a while to get down into that lower state of, you know, theta and then delta.
Yeah.
Finally, at the end, I was plastered to the ground.
Yeah.
Literally. I mean, so how am I going to get up?
Yeah. But that's why we want to learn to stay present in the moment. Just that's the next frontier. The great frontier we've got to explore is the present moment.
Yeah.
That's it, the present moment.
Yeah.
And it really makes a difference in your life.
Okay, well, now getting back to the addictions, you know, I was reading a very interesting article, and it all had to do with diet. How people have gotten into this whole thing of how they look and their diets and what they're eating. And then there were a whole bunch of letters afterwards. I don't know if you're familiar with Sun Magazine. It was an old issue.
Okay.
And it was just amazing how all the people, how they talked about shame and guilt, and if they, you know, went and broke their addiction, you know, like they thought they were addicted to food or whatever.
Right.
And how, even though you're taking it one day at a time, did you come across any of that, feeling any shame or...
Yeah, you do, especially in the beginning of recovery, but... that's working these principles that I'm talking about, which is part of the 12 steps, the principles. You start to, you work on this shame stuff, you work on all this stuff, you know, and it does get lifted. You can live a more comfortable life without, because shame, it's nothing, you know, it's horrible to the person. We feel less than, no good, but, you know, don't have a place on the planet even to, you know. So it's getting away from those things, which is what we do when we step onto a spiritual path. We start, things start dropping away, and we're not the same person.
So in your book, you're in the intro, really sets the stage, because it gives a brief description of the surf culture, like we talked about, and the contrasting hippie culture of surf and drugs. And that was your lifestyle at the time. Then you met Flowbird.
Yes.
And how significant was your eventual connection with her, and how did it change your life?
Well,
maybe you might want to start a little bit and introduce Flowbird.
Yeah, well, so here's what Flowbird was. A lady that was, this was back in 1968 when I first met her. So she was almost 60 years old then, and she was in 12-step recovery and already had like 8 years clean. And she meditated every morning and would follow the guidance every morning that happened, that she would write about. So one day, early in the morning, I heard a car pull down our driveway, and I look out in this. We lived right on almost one house back from the ocean out on the North Shore. And this lady got out of her car and walked up to the front door, looked for the key, and found it up there just like she was supposed to be there. And I found out she was, you know. But anyway, so she just moved in, and the real estate guy came out the next day, was showing the house for rent or for sale. And he said, and she was there, and because it was a completely furnished four-bedroom house right on the beach that she was guided to. So she was guided there that morning. And she told the real estate guy, well, I was guided here. Can you have the electricity turned on? You know, so she knew. I saw her go around the world three times with no money.
No, wow.
Just by listening to her inner heart and making, as long as your only desire is to help and serve others, mm-hmm. you can't go wrong. You got to watch listening to guidance. It's not all about you. It's about helping others. So that's how it was 1968, and I'd never heard of any of these programs before, the 12-step programs. I'd never heard of them at this time. But this is how I ended up going to my first meeting, when she moved in next door to me. And how significant was it? My life has never been the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, my life has literally never been the same.
Wow. So let's get backtrack a bit with that. So she tells the real estate, she's not really buying the house, right?
No, no.
And she says, well, I was guided here, turn on the power.
Yeah.
How did he react to that?
He went, what? Let's just put it that way. She was in that house for six more months. So
wow.
He turned on the electricity in that house. She started a meeting, and people were attracted to it on the North Shore.
Okay, so that's when you first started going
yeah,
to
when I,
meetings.
Yeah, when I
right
first started there. Going to meetings.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over right. And so
ago.
When she was guided, she knew that she was in a place to help somebody?
Yes, always.
Always.
Always. Mm-hmm. And so she was led right to that house. And then a friend of mine, I went back to California for a while after meeting her, and I'd started going to meetings, but I was bouncing in and out. So a friend of mine back there just got out of a Tascadero. It's a hospital for the criminally insane. Mm-hmm. And he was a full-blown addict. And
mm-hmm.
So he came over to my house and said, I want to go to Hawaii. I want to go to Hawaii. So I told him all about the North Shore. That's where all the young people are. And I actually told him about this lady. And what he heard was, oh, there's an alcoholic lady out there. Maybe if I don't have any money or get lost, I can shack up with her. I mean,
right, right.
That's my clear message. So anyway, he actually comes to Hawaii, lands around 11 or 12 at night, and hitchhikes out to the North Shore and goes to sleep at Sunset Beach. Well, in the meantime now, it's early in the next morning. Flowbird always gets up very early in the morning and meditates and listens. So she's up early listening, and all of a sudden the message was, go to Sunset Beach right now, urgently. I mean, it was no casual thing, you know. Might stop by Sunset Beach. Mm-hmm. Get there now. Mm-hmm. So she gets there. She's walking down to the ocean, looking around. Okay, here I am. What do you need, you know, universe? Tommy, in the meantime, is waking up under the bushes, and he has no dope with him, no money, and he goes, oh, man, I've made a mistake. you know, here I am over here. I know no one. I'm strung out. Mm-hmm. So he looks up, and he sees this strange-looking lady that I had showed him a picture of. Mm. And he went, wow, that's that lady. So he walks up, and he can just stutter at this point. And so he's just stuttering, and he says my name, and she goes, oh, you're why I'm here. Put your stuff in the car. So that was 50 years ago this last December, and he's never been loaded since.
No kidding. So never. Are you still in contact with him?
Oh, yeah. We're best of friends.
Oh, great.
He lives on Kauai.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
oh.
So we spent many years. Well, we spent a good 10 years. Flaubert died in 78. In 1978, and we met her in 68. So we spent a good 10 years with her, traveling around and learning to listen to our own hearts and be... step out there into the unknown, yeah. You know. So, yeah, it really works, though.
Yeah, because, you know, it's interesting when you get into, you know, the whole mindset of you're here with a purpose.
Yeah.
And if you are here to serve others.
Right.
Yeah, and it's really something to get into. Like I'm still trying to search for that. What am I here for?
Yeah.
How am I serving others?
Keep reading those two books.
Yeah. Well, that's funny you mentioned that. I might have to buy them from you here at the end of the show.
Let me just say something about that. This is one of my favorite stories about listening to guidance. Mm-hmm. So during this process, which, you know, we can't get into my whole everyday second life. But anyway, so this is...
Well, we can make it a two-part show, you know.
No, that's okay. I got to go somewhere. But anyway, so this is a few years in advance. One day I was in my meditation room, and I'm meditating, and I get this vibration. I'm supposed to go to India. I've never been there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm supposed to go to India and work with the addicts.
Mm-hmm.
So I come out of my meditation room, and I tell my wife, I'm supposed to go to India. And she goes, okay. She was just getting, you know, she was used to that. So anyway, I went to that. And so I went to India many times, met Mother Teresa, you know, the whole thing. I've spent time with Ram Dass at his house on Maui when he was alive, you know, have met a lot of holy people. And this one time, they asked me in India to come there and speak at a convention, you know, for help addicts, you know. So usually when I'm asked to speak somewhere in the U.S., they pay my way there, and because, you know, I can't go everywhere everybody wants me to, so I get my way. So anyway, I start meditating on it, go, are we supposed to go to India? I didn't care if I had to spend my own money, but work wasn't going really good. So this one day I went in, it was about 7 days before the flight was going to leave, and we had to make up our minds, my wife and I. So I go in my meditation room, close the door, I sit down, light some candles, light some incense, all my little airy-fairy stuff I do, and I sit down, and on a cushion I start praying. Okay, am I supposed to go to India or not? I got to have a clear direction now, today. It's getting late. And so nothing's happening. Nothing is happening. I walk out of the meditation room, and as I click the door shut, the phone rings. And it's Wood Valley Buddhist Temple.
Oh, right here in
Hawaii. Yeah, one you went to visit.
Hawaii, right.
And about 8 months before that, they had a fundraiser that we went to, and we donated a little bit of money like everybody did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they called and said, Tom, you and B just won first prize at the drawing. It's a round-trip ticket to India.
Yeah.
See, I almost started crying then.
Yeah,
I just left. I clicked the door shut. The phone rang.
Mm-hmm.
I got my guidance.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to India.
Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah.
I mean, my life, all significant things that have happened in my life are like this.
Well, now that's amazing. See how, and the way you said that, you know, I got my guidance. So it is amazing if we really pay attention.
We have to pay attention.
Yeah, that's just the key.
We got to pay attention. We got to hear that voice inside. You know what I mean? We
mm-hmm.
gotta pay, and we can't do it if we're in a storyline making some other thing up.
Right.
We gotta be back present in the moment and just, by the way, when you're doing the bowls, it's like mindfulness is the kind of meditation I teach.
Mm-hmm.
Using the breath as your anchor to the moment. So your mind starts to wander And all you do is come back to your breath. Keep coming back to your breath. 10,000 times if you have to.
Well, that's amazing.
And in the bowls, when you start thinking, I forgot to mention that for instructions at the beginning, you just come back to the sound. Come mm-hmm. back to the sound. It's normal to think. You're never going to stop thinking. But you don't have to follow it.
So, and it's, I'm glad you mentioned that, because as we were doing the bowls, I'm going through, my mind is just racing.
Right.
And I got to a point, because I can feel, oh man, I got the shallow breath going on, and everything's racing. And then I remember taking a couple really deep breaths and let that whole diaphragm fill up.
Yeah.
And came down, and it just settled me down. And then I realized where my shoulders were up here. Then I just let my jaw slacken a little bit.
So that's always the answer when we have anxiety or tension or anything or confusion. Mm-hmm. Come back to the moment.
Yeah.
That's where we take refuge, is in the moment.
Okay, so we got a couple questions. You know, what was the most profound thing that you learned or observed about Flowbird that you eventually incorporated into your life, a game changer? This sounds like one of them.
Yeah. Well, really, her availability.
Ah.
To all human beings.
Mm-hmm.
When we came into town, people would hear and they would be coming over to visit her. Didn't matter how tired she was. She was older now, too. Mm-hmm. I remember. She was older. And she would always be available.
Mm.
I learned that the best gig in the universe is serving other people. And you can't do that if you're not open, if your heart is not open to them.
Mm-hmm.
I have found no better gig. This is it.
Yeah.
You know. Now this is, we don't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But you're here witnessing where we've ended up.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Right.
My wife and I look around sometimes and goes, oh my God, how did we ever create this thing? You know? Outside and inside, yeah?
Mm-hmm,
it's a retreat center, folks.
It really looks like one. This is our favorite Airbnb that we've ever been to. And you got, you know, last time we were here, you told us a story about all the statues outside and everything, because you can take a walk. It's what, 3 acres?
Yeah, 3 acres.
And you told us a story how you and your buddy put together some money and
I was in Bali. My wife and I used to go to Bali a lot, and I was one morning sitting in the dark because it was dawn. You know, I was on my terrace in Bali, and I was thinking, I loved Buddhas then. I had little ones everywhere, but I wanted some of these big 2,000-pound ones. You know, and I knew the only way to get one would be in a container. And boy, I said, that would be so costly to even send one back if you're just going to send one in a container. So during that morning meditation, I got it. Start a business.
Mm-hmm.
Come to Bali, and you love being in Bali, and start to export 40-foot containers.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? So I came back, and I got a friend interested. Neither one of us knew anything about furniture or you know, teak furniture. It's loaded with teak furniture over there. So I told him, let's do it. So we got together $50,000 between us, and we flew back to Bali, and we filled up 2 40-foot containers of Buddha statues, beautiful teak furniture, dining sets, just gorgeous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We came back, and we didn't even have a place to sell it yet. And so we came back before the containers did, and we got a space we rented for a month. And within 3 or 4 days, we walked up to each other and said, this was the greatest decision we ever had. We were already, in 3 or 4 days, gotten our money back.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I could unload and sell a whole 40-foot container in less than a month.
And so you kept doing it.
We kept doing it for quite a few years.
Yeah. That's great.
And I would get Buddhist. This flooring you see in the house, this is from Bali. This is called Murbau.
No, it's amazing.
Like, it's real wood. It's 1.5 inches thick. This isn't the laminates.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
That's from Bali.
That is amazing.
And that's from
because
listening.
I remember
once again.
You,
that's from listening.
Yeah.
To the silence.
There you go.
Sit and listen to the silence. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you... And so, you know, when you first started, I mean, I'm sure you don't get clean at the snap of a finger. So how difficult was it for you to do that? Did you go in and out?
Yes. Yeah. Some people actually come to their first meeting and never go out again. Like my friend Tommy, met Flaubert on the beach, put your stuff in the car. He's never been loaded since. Huh. I went to my first meeting in 68 with Flaubert at her, when she moved in, but I didn't get clean till 71. I mean, I would get like 2 months clean. I'd get 3 months clean. I'd get 2 weeks clean, but I kept picking up again. I kept using.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, I got to that place where I knew I just couldn't go on. I was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and something happened on the morning of October 20th, 71. I got up. I usually ran and puked over a railing. I usually got loaded right away. For some reason, this day I didn't. And I walked across the street to the beach, and I just broke down crying. I just said, I can't go on like this.
Yeah.
And a wave of peacefulness went through me, just like I was wrapped in a warm blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And a voice said, you never have to use again. And I never have. But I'd become willing to do whatever it takes to keep this.
Yeah.
It was a gift, yes. It was nothing I did that morning. The gift was given to me. But it's my I have to hang on to that gift. I have to be willing to do whatever it takes to stay clean, no matter what it is.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that's a real good message, because in there I hear perseverance and determination to, you know, do what you want to really do.
Yeah, yeah.
And really commit to it.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, in your... Well, I was going to say, you know, like, what thoughts or past programs resurfaced that made you go in and out of addiction?
Thinking, very easy question, good question, but there is a difference in all the drugs out there. So my drug of choice was definitely shooting dope.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured if I didn't use a needle, that it'd be okay to smoke a joint.
Mm-hmm.
There's the reservation. That's what kills us. Mm-hmm. It'll be okay if I smoke a joint.
Right.
And it wasn't.
Yeah.
Because why? It leads you right back to the... Eventually, you might smoke a joint every day, once a day, and be okay for 2 or 3 weeks. But all of a sudden, before you know it, you're shooting dope again, and you're lost and gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so addiction is the only terminal disease, because it is, it's a terminal disease that tells us we don't have a disease.
Mm-hmm.
So addiction is the only disease that tells us we don't have one.
Yeah.
You got it? It just gets in the mind. It's very tricky. And pretty soon it's got you convinced you can smoke one joint.
Right. I mean, it's something as simple as coffee.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting rid of coffee. I got out of coffee. I'm not doing it. And then, I'm here in Hawaii. And, I got to try their coffee. Oh, my God. And then next thing you know, I'm drinking coffee again.
Yeah, you're in the land of coffee, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's one addiction to the other.
Right,
one's just worse, you know, than the other. But in terms of destroying your life, you know. But that's really something. So when you have these groups and when you do group sessions and people are coming in, how do other people respond to that? How do you keep them in the group? Is there like a...
Well, some of them don't stay.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't force them.
Uh-huh.
But what you can do is a meeting, the most important person in the room sometimes is the newcomer.
Mm-hmm.
The one, you know, and we carry that. That's what my life today, and has been for 48 years now, carrying the message. The message, it doesn't say I'm supposed to go out and earn a bunch of money. It doesn't say I'm supposed to do it, you know, have any of that stuff. It says I'm supposed to carry the message that there is a way up and out for hopeless addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And they start going to meetings and they start hearing their story over and over again. They start hearing things they identify with, and yet this person's been clean 10 years now. You know what I mean? So that's how people end up coming in and staying around. They want what they heard.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, because when we do these men's groups, because that's what I'm connected with, I'm in a men's group.
It's a group.
Same thing, and it's this whole group thing, and it's like whenever somebody new comes in, there is kind of a focus there to explain what's going on,
right.
You know, what the procedures are, and then it's interesting to see the dedication of people either coming or going for whatever reason, you know, it does get emotional.
Yeah.
You know, and some people just can't deal with that, and right. they'll leave a group, you know, or it's too personal
for
them.
When it's time, they'll be back.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, it sounds just like the 12 step.
Yeah.
Yeah,
very
any
similar.
Any kind of group dynamic like that. Because what it is, it's a support system that's been made up for you
mm-hmm.
that is given to you
yeah.
free of charge, a
yeah.
support group
yeah.
you know, where you learn, you can go in and talk about anything that's troubling you.
Right.
You know, so
that
it's very powerful dynamics.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm finding, too.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. So, in your book, May I Sleep With You, you talk about your Tibetan bowl therapy, which we just
right.
did, and how it assists in getting one into the various states of brain waves. My wife
right.
and I are really into that. We used to do the isolation tanks, John C. Lilly. It was a business of ours for a while. And in fact, we interviewed somebody that opened up a business in Bozeman, Montana.
Yeah.
If you go to the archives, kgvm.org, and find the Men's Network Radio and go to the archives, you'll see our interview with the folks that have the gravity, what's it called? I think it's gravity, or it's a float tank business, and you'll see that in the archives. So anyway, let's get back to that about the brain waves in different states. How can that help with recovery?
How can that help?
Yeah, how does it open the subconscious mind?
It's putting us in a higher state.
Okay.
One of the 12 steps is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact. So this whole thing about getting out of self and letting a higher power come in, that's what happens when we meditate. Meditation is the focal, I think, of the 12 steps. And so this is what, this when you're laying down there doing, that's what you're doing, is meditating. And each going from alpha to theta and up to delta is going from one consciousness to a higher one, you know, depending on what your brain waves are in.
Okay.
So it's very important because it's, the 11th step isn't, we don't tell people how to meditate,
mm-hmm.
just that you have to learn that. And so this is one aspect of it, you know, and so is mindfulness.
And so how does it open the subconscious mind so you can get these stories and stuff to...
Well, it puts you in the moment once again, you
mm-hmm.
know. So if you're in the moment, you're not... In other words, that's why I told you, if you're caught up in a bunch of thoughts,
right.
just start breathing.
There you go.
Go back to the... Because you can't be in the future and past if you're in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So this enables us to, and how does that help in recovery? It's the one day at a time thing again.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like we got to get out. If you're out of tomorrow and last week, then you can be present, and that's where the holiness is. You know, that's where
sure.
the refuge point is.
But that's got to be tough when you think about it. So here I am coming into recovery, and now I'm going to take one day at a time.
Yeah.
And just be present in that present moment,
yeah.
I could be still telling myself a whole bunch of stories of, man, that felt so good when I was loaded, you know. And,
yeah.
And now I got to face
but
all of this stuff. Then I go
back
to the future, geez, now I got to face this tomorrow at work or whatever.
But see, the thing is, we're learning to not believe that stuff. We're
okay.
learning to breathe and come back to the moment. You can't be in a storyline if you're in the moment. If
okay.
you're in the present moment, you can't be in the past or future.
Mm-hmm. That's
doesn't
true.
Work. Yeah. Doesn't work.
You can't, right.
Yeah.
It sometimes it's pretty tricky to stay in that present moment.
I've been doing it. I've been meditating for over since 1966.
Uh-huh.
Steadily.
Sure.
Since 66.
Okay.
This
yeah.
is over 50 years or whatever it is, you know. It's over 50 years,
yeah.
and I'm still doing it every day.
Okay.
I'm still practicing it, and they call it a practice.
A practice.
Don't forget that. It's a practice. It's nothing we're going to get together. You know, you just keep showing up for it.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you mentioned it that way. I mean, it makes me feel better because,
yeah.
I like to slow down and meditate, and then it's like, when am I going to get to the point where I'm always in that present moment?
Yeah.
You know?
So you got to let all that go.
Right.
You don't have any control over it. and that's important. Because when we start to get control over something, it gets crazy. You know what I mean? It doesn't work.
No,
it gets
confusing, I agree.
And everything else.
I agree, and because then it becomes it's almost like a dogma in religion.
Right,
you know?
Right.
All of a sudden, you got to be in this discipline.
Right. No.
You know, I can't eat that. I can't do this. You
meditation
know.
Practice will just take care. You know, we just learn to sit and listen, like mm-hmm. I said.
Yeah, that's good. In both books, you talk about service. You know, and you briefly touched on it at the beginning of our conversation here. And what role does that play towards recovery, towards making progress on the... And, well, let's start with that. You know, what role does that play towards recovery?
Well, it gets you off yourself, which is the most important thing in the world.
Ah.
If you're in service, if you're thinking of others,
yeah.
If you're in service helping the newcomer get clean or just... there's many forms of service where mm-hmm. you go out and help others.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in that state, you can't be dwelling on self. You can't go all negative.
Yeah.
Because you're putting love into action. You're not just talking about love. You're putting it into action.
Into action.
Yeah, and that's the most important thing. That's the only... We can't... Flaubert used to say, how do you know you're making progress on the spiritual path? And the answer to that is, when you first wake up in the morning, your first thought isn't on me. It's on others. The minute you open your eyes, it's on, what can I do for somebody else? Instead of, what am I going to do today? What am I going to do about this? That's I.
Mm-hmm.
So service gets us off the self.
Yeah.
And listening to the self is what gets us in trouble.
Sure, and you know, it's really something too, because I think it has a lot to do with really opening up your heart too, because you can get in this ego state, like, I'm going to do this service expecting to get something back.
Yeah.
You know, so all of a sudden it's not this pure
letting go of just being
in service and loving.
Yeah,
whoever you're helping, whatever you're doing.
It's called love without a price tag.
Love without a price tag. Yeah. I like that.
Now, one of the grooviest things you can do is during the day, look for something to do. Look for a loving thing to do for somebody. What my wife and I do, and not for any sake of yours.
Mm-hmm.
So the open market is up here. You know the open market.
Yeah.
It's on Makuu Market.
And that's on Sundays?
Yeah, Sundays. Mm-hmm. So it's $2 to park. So we pull up, we always have four ones ready. We give the guy at the little booth $4 instead of two, and we say, pass it on to the car behind
us. Oh, nice.
Yeah, we do that every Sunday.
Oh.
And it's a nice way of just doing something thoughtful for another person.
Yeah.
And not being asked to do it or not, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's like those commercials you see that are pretty popular now, where, you know, somebody's opening a door for somebody. I don't know what they're selling. You forget what they're selling, insurance or whatever. But all of a sudden, it's about kindness.
Yeah, about kindness, yeah, exactly.
And
that's
mom.
What we want to live by.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s, early 70s, really, because I was clean, there used to be bumper stickers. Practice random kindness and senseless acts of beauty. I'm still doing it.
That's great. Well, let's just dip in a little bit to your time with Mother Teresa. I'm sure you must have really felt that. I mean, in your book, the first time, you had Montezuma's revenge and
to get to her and couldn't. Well, let me just say that, first of all, just her way of being, you know, is unbelievable, because here she is. She's just so arthritic. Her hands are like this. You know?
Oh, wow.
And the Sisters of Charity is who she was with, the Sisters of Charity, white robes, blue stripes.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's so ironic, because if you go down to the Mother Center on Sundays for early Mass at 6 a.m., you know, you can just go in, anyone can go in, and she's always, of course, in the back,
mm-hmm.
letting the minister run the show, because that's the way the Catholic Church is set up anyway. But there she is, very humble, and just in the back row, and very approachable. Now, if she was in the U.S., we wouldn't be able to get near her.
Yeah.
They'd have guns around. You know, you wouldn't be able to get near her.
Yeah.
Over there, she's just in her little place, Mother Teresa Center, and you can see her every day. Mm-hmm. She's usually, I would just get up. I'm not a Catholic guy. Mm-hmm. I don't go to Mass, but I do when I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
When she was alive,
yeah.
Because I could, I had her, I wear these Tibetan bracelets.
Uh-huh.
I had her bless them, you know.
Oh, nice.
And stuff like that. And I had the opportunity, what in the book you'll find out that after I met Father Egan,
who's
the junkie priest.
Right, right.
He's died now too, but I had heard of him. I knew who he was. And so I saw him at the first meeting I went to in Calcutta when I was guided there to Calcutta. And I found in one of the biggest cities in the world, dirtiest cities in the world, within 2 hours after I got off the plane, I was in a meeting. I found it. I was led to it. You know,
that was an amazing story.
Yeah. And these ministers were there because Mother Teresa wanted to do it. So anyway, I was just in on the opening, on the beginning dialogue about starting a treatment center through Mother Teresa for addicts, because they're picking everybody up off the streets anyway. They might as well pick the addicts off the street.
Mm-hmm.
So that did happen, and I was in on the very beginning of that. You know, I mean, when we landed in Calcutta and you stand up to depart the plane, I was the only Westerner getting off the plane.
Wow.
Nobody
amazing.
Goes to Calcutta.
Well, I didn't realize that until I read your book, how dirty it is.
Yeah,
and
they call it the City of Love. And it really is. I used to, at 6 in the morning, go down these dark streets crowded with thousands of people taking baths in the fire hydrogen. You know, never felt fear once.
Wow, amazing.
No fear.
Yeah.
You know, it is the City of Love.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing. And so you can feel this humbleness from Mother Teresa.
Absolutely.
And the service that she does.
That's what they're doing. They took me on a tour. One nun took me to the House of the Dying, where they pick up people every day and bring them here and give them a decent death.
Last death,
you know what I mean? And they have an orphanage of kids they've picked up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, their work is ceaseless, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unreal.
Well, that is amazing. And then, let's see.
Not too much time left, I don't think.
Yeah, we're at about 42 minutes right now.
Really?
Yeah.
My watch must be crazy. Okay.
I could time it here. So, I don't mean to keep you.
No, that's all right.
This is really interesting. You know, let's just get on to the, stay with the service, you know, how we talk about service and what role it plays in our recovery, but also making progress on the spiritual path.
Right. Well, you're making, when you find yourself out giving, you know you're making progress.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, a lot of people walk around and want enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I want to be enlightened.
Right.
Well, we won't go into that right now, but I always tell them, instead of wanting to be enlightened, if something happened where you were struck with enlightenment right now, not lightning, but enlightenment, if you were struck with it, what would happen is you would be compelled to serve others. That's what happens. So I say, why not right now? Why wait for enlightenment, why not just be compelled to help people
help others.
Mm-hmm. Just go out and give every second of your life.
Sure.
Because that's what's going to happen if you get enlightened.
Yeah.
That's why I love that.
Yeah, that is.
I made it up. I love it.
No, that's really good. Well,
Because I tell my guys that. Don't talk about being enlightened. Go act like you are.
Are enlightened, yeah.
Okay.
All right, so let's just touch a little bit on karma. Mm-hmm. You know, what you have put out might come back to you.
Yeah.
And over here on the island, I noticed the other day we had left a shovel out and some potting soil and I forgot what else, something that didn't mean too much to us. Oh, it was a 1 gallon gas tent.
Yeah.
And we left it out. We're in a sea can now camping while we developed this property. Well, we come back and it's gone and you can see tire tracks. They pulled right in.
Oh,
and they tried to open up the back of the sea can. They couldn't get in because of a lock, you know. And I got into the state of forgiveness and into past karma, because during that ski culture thing, you know, and I got in with the wrong group or whatever, you know. And I remember one time we were siphoning, this is really funny, I mean, it's not funny, but we were siphoning gas out of cars in this parking lot up at the ski area so we can take a ski trip down the Taos from, and that was, and I thought, well, isn't that ironic that the gas can got taken? And I thought about this karma. Now, I don't know where I'm going with this about enlightenment, but more than anything, it was forgiveness.
Yeah.
Knowing that, well, they must need that more than right. I do right now.
Yeah.
And just forgiving it. Yeah, but yeah. I connected it with a past act that I did.
Right.
Whether
right,
exactly. it was guilt or whatever, it was just some sort of a connection there.
Right.
You know. So, and I think with enlightenment, that's all that happens, is we have a connection of this high of our higher self
right.
that we're connecting with.
Right.
So let's move, you know, fast forward a little bit in the book of the Mindful Addict, and you eventually facilitated 12-step groups all over the world. How did you go from recovery to mentor?
Well, I would first of all say I didn't start meetings all over the world. I've been involved. You know, I'm involved
okay.
all. I've been involved all over
yeah.
the world. You know,
okay.
meeting so many places. And what we have in 12-step recovery is sponsors. So you're at meetings all the time, and you're listening to people talk. We recommend getting a sponsor, and that's somebody that's got more time in the program than you and has been through the steps, worked the steps in their life, so you've got somebody to go to get guided. It is a mentor, but we call it a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get, you know, people come up and ask you if you're once again available, right?
Yeah.
You got to be available in life to
right.
get anything done, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's good, because even I'm finding in these men's groups, I've checked out a few different places, and even the one I'm in, they offer places where, you know, I call them a facilitator.
Yeah, right.
You know, has gone through more and knows the program. And,
right, right.
And, you know, so it's a nice deal there. So throughout the book, you know, you trusted your intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And even when Flobird was dying, I guess it was in New Mexico,
yeah.
if I remember
yeah.
right. And for some reason, you were called back to Hawaii. You felt like, wow, I got to get back to Hawaii.
I know that was it, and that was so heavy for me.
Yeah,
I mean, I felt that I was supposed to leave for Hawaii that
mm-hmm.
day.
Yeah,
and here she is on her deathbed.
Yeah,
she could have been alive for 6 months or 6 minutes, or I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, for me to leave her was like an impossible. I couldn't do it. I didn't know how I was going to do it. So about 3 o'clock in the end, I was telling everybody, God, I'm bummed. I'm supposed to leave, but how can I do this? But it's ironic that was her teachings. No matter what, listen to your voice inside.
Yeah.
And so we're all sitting around. Everybody leaves the house that she's in. And I'm sitting right outside the door that has a window looking to the outside, but it looks into her room now. And I just closed my eyes and started what I thought I was making myself. I thought I was meditating, and I closed my eyes and I just pictured Flobird with white light around her and with a tunnel going up like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, what's going on? I started just picturing that, and then I saw her rising up, and I got goosebumps that you've never even had before. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it was just the most incredible feeling. Just these goosebumps were just taking me over. And as I just watched her rise up and over, and all of a sudden, I just went, whoa, and I go into the room, and like there's a mist in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's an actual mist, and I read later that can happen when somebody leaves the body.
Ah.
I didn't even know that,
but
that can actually happen.
Ah.
And so she was gone, but obviously her body was there.
Yeah.
But she was gone.
Yeah.
And I mean, within an hour from that time, I was in a van driving out of the land. I was on my way to California
mm-hmm.
to go to Hawaii. And Flobird used to always, this is a heavy part in the movie, this next scene,
mm-hmm.
is that Flobird always told us, once I'm gone, if you see a rainbow, it's me.
Oh.
So we're driving out of New Mexico in the middle of nowhere. And as you mm-hmm. know, blue skies are what they're
right.
famous for.
Right.
Just no, you know, pure blue skies.
Right.
And all of a sudden I look up and I say, stop, stop. And we get out and there's a rainbow and the blue sky arcing over our land.
Wow, amazing.
You know, I could cry right now.
Right,
you know
right. I mean? Oh, that, I'm getting chills just listening to the story.
That, and that was so powerful. She told us to always look to a rainbow and it would be her.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this, folks that are listening, this is all true stuff.
Yeah.
It is really true stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's amazing. So, again, just getting back to that, so you were guided, you know, what would be something to, when you, even in the 12 steps, do you talk about listening to your intuition?
Yeah.
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 So, how do you trust your intuition?
Well, by doing it over and over and over again, practicing.
Mm-hmm. Practicing.
Practicing.
In everything that you come across throughout
it's
the day,
practice.
Listening to your intuition.
Yeah, it's practice.
Mm-hmm. Should I take a right turn or a left turn here?
Right.
You know, or...
But once again, we've got, that's where meditation comes in, because it's training us to listen.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's the art of meditation. It is an art,
yeah,
and it is training us all along. In other words, people think, I'm not going to just sit there and do nothing. I always tell them, meditation is not about sitting and doing nothing. It's about sitting and doing nothing else.
Ah, well, there's a difference.
There's the difference.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know if you listened to Moji at all. But
I've read some.
Yeah, so I was doing a meditation with him while I was driving one day. It just came on. I had it on Spotify.
Yeah.
While I'm driving. And it's, and so I got some confusion there of meditating on nothing or whatever. But in it, he's going like, so you hear the traffic. Or you hear this sound here, or the bird.
Right, that's mindfulness.
Mindfulness.
Yeah.
And then just let it go.
Yeah.
Let it go by you.
It'll go as fast as it can.
As if there are that. Now that is a great I like that explanation, because that just brought me into, okay, now I understand
if
better.
If you don't dwell on the thoughts, just let them go through, they leave as fast as they can.
I like that.
Yeah,
they leave as fast as they came. That's a good one to grok.
So don't get hung up on them.
Get hung up on them. So eventually you had a relationship with Erin, E-R-I-N, Erin. You remember that in the book?
Oh, yeah, but some of the names are changed.
Oh, okay.
So I forget who Erin is.
All right. Well, and
the publishing company.
That's when you got into long-distance marathon running, and you two were
that
training.
That was probably my ex-wife before B at Terry.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. I think you two were together for about 6 years or something in the book. And then and you started to fade from the 12-step program, because you got into this discipline of being a marathon runner.
Oh, right.
Right?
Yeah.
And exercise.
Well, another,
and
yeah, I got, what do you want to call it? Complacent.
Uh-huh.
I was still going to meetings, but I was complacent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Easy to do.
Yeah, easy to do. Doesn't work, though.
Yeah. Well, even now, like Marion and I, you know, we're doing our yoga and meditating on that, and we do these kriyas and stuff, but it's not as... I'm not putting as much into it as I did on the mainland because, well, we're here and it's a little bit harder to...
Yeah, well, it is,
you know,
which it is,
But I could relate to that. So anyway, then your relationship ended, and late in the book you mentioned that there's all sorts of addictions beyond alcoholism and drugs, which I think we touched on at the beginning. So how did you recognize that you lapsed into another form of addiction, which is the training for marathon and... You know, because to me, that is an addiction. I mean, I'm addicted
to
skiing.
Well, to train at that level.
Yeah.
You know, I was running 60 miles a week, you know, and lots of marathons and, you know, stuff like that. So it is, and it's something you got to come to deal with, you know. You got to say, is this getting in the way of my 12-step recovery? You know, and if it's not, then, you know, so it's real tricky to look at every addiction and see... where it's finding its place in your life.
Yeah. Well, and then you met Bill, and he kind of got you back, brought you back into the...
Yeah. See, I don't know who Bill is again.
The
publishing company made us change names.
Okay.
I'd have to be reading it to know who he met.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might want to dip back into your book there. Geez, I got a whole bunch of of questions left, and we only have about 6 minutes.
Well, I'm getting tired anyway. So we can always do
I mean,
it.
There's so much more we can recover. Your time in Calcutta, meeting with Mother Teresa.
I love your
mantra, show up and be present.
Yeah.
And then grace enters into one's life.
Right.
So how do you describe showing up?
Exactly what it means. Go show up. You know, just go there, be present. Mm-hmm. That's how my wife, because they tell, especially the newcomer in the beginning, it's just all we're asking them to do is show up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a simple task. Show up, put your butt in the chair, and don't move.
Yeah.
Stay there.
Yeah.
Now, that's how my wife got her doctorate.
Mm.
She used that mantra, just show up and put your butt in the chair.
Yeah.
Because most people start doctorate programs, don't make them. They don't finish.
Oh.
You know, so she used that thing she learned when she was a newcomer.
Mm-hmm.
To show up and put your butt in the chair and don't move. Don't try to run.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how she
And
ended
I think
up
we could
doctor.
Use that. I love that mantra because we could use that in
everything
we do in life.
Yeah.
Even being part of a men's group or in our relationship with our spouse or girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever.
Yeah.
In all our relationships.
Yeah.
Showing up.
Yeah.
I'm glad I showed up today.
Yeah, there you go.
So this has been wonderful, Tom.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you taking the time because I know
you got
a busy schedule.
Yeah.
And so we enjoy coming here.
Yeah.
And I would recommend everybody to go to it. Now, do you have a website or how could
I'm on Facebook.
You're on Facebook.
Yeah, under Tom Catton.
At CATTON.
Yeah.
Okay. And the movie, are you part of the directing or?
I'm the author of The Mindful Addict.
Okay.
But I will be involved. You know, I help with the script writer.
Mm-hmm.
We're done with our second version, third version almost now. But the first version, we worked a lot on it together, the writer and I.
Okay.
I'm an important part because the movie's about me.
Yeah.
So I kind of got to be there in every aspect.
Sure.
And, you know, even when the director starts and stuff like that.
Okay.
But in the meantime, Amazon has got both books.
That's what I was getting
The
at.
Mindful Addict and May I Sit With You.
Okay.
And if you want to hear more Flowbird stories, they're in there.
All right. Great. All right, Tom. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you. May you be blessed.
Thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you.